Hi, I'm Patrick Finley, and he's Jason Leisure. Jason, you seem particularly disgusted with what we saw today. We'll talk about all that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Jason, we're sitting here at U.S. Bank Stadium, America's greatest NFL stadium.
Second greatest.
Behind?
Greatest non-SoFi division.
I would say greatest non-Lambo division. I think Lambo's a different conversation.
I think SoFi's got to be a different conversation because it was $6 billion, and most of them cost $2 billion.
Okay. We'll so bring this.
I mean, you can't compete with somebody that's spending three times as much as you.
And, you know, we can talk about this at the end of the show, too. Jason, I know you're a big baseball stadium fan, but I think there should be two categories. I think there should be the classic category and the modern category. This is my favorite modern, but I'll give you SoFi. Anyway, we're burying the lead.
Yeah,
here.
We're getting really off on a tangent.
You
here
can tell that
with.
We'd like to talk about anything.
This is like what it's like to broadcast the Bears game, I think, for Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, is you're sitting there like, oh, what do we talk about in the
you
fourth
start
quarter?
Start doing shtick. Yeah.
Disaster.
Okay.
30-12 Vikings on Monday Night Football. Kind of predictable is one of the sadder parts about it is I don't know that anyone really saw this going that differently. I thought the offense would play a little better for the Bears. Problems everywhere. No consistent ground game. Tell me any of these. Let me know if this is a new problem or something you've been hearing for 3 months. No consistent running game. Some big plays here and there from DeAndre Swift, but not the consistent 3 to 4 yards that they need to get to manageable third downs. A totally stunted passing game. You sent me a stat that in the first half, the passing chart on Caleb Williams was one throw that was more than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. Defensively, continuing to bleed as they have been and getting torched pretty good by the Vikings. In a game that could have been worse, probably could have been even more lopsided. The Vikings were really trying to run clock at the end. And this all to me, really at this point, the conversation has to be first and foremost and in the majority of what we're talking about Caleb Williams and 2025. And Caleb Williams is not right now where I would have wanted him to be 14 games into his rookie season. It's almost over. It feels like there's still a lot of football to sit through for the Bears. But his rookie season is just about over, 14 games in. And the game he had tonight, Patrick, the game he had Monday night in Minnesota, 18 of 31, 191 yards, one touchdown, one lost fumble. The offense scores 12 points. We can get into a lot of reasons that are not necessarily Caleb Williams' fault, but he has some responsibility in this. That is a Justin Fields-type game right there. That is a Justin Fields-type stat line that wasn't good enough. That's Justin Fields' year three stat line, mind you. And really, that performance, if you check the averages on those, the passer rating for the season and yards per game for the season for Caleb, what he did Monday night in Minnesota is kind of on track with what he has for the season at large.
I'll give you more stats at halftime. 7 for 9 for 59 yards.
And down 13-0.
The Bears went into halftime for the third straight game scoreless.
53-0 the last three first halves.
And as it's been the last three games, you look at an uptick in the second half and you have to ask yourself, how much of this was growth and development? How much of this was playing when you're down three scores and who the hell cares what happens? And playing shell defenses, you sit there and go, as long as nobody gets behind us, you can have whatever you want in front of us. How much of this is a rookie quarterback who is not being put into situations where he's learning how to win or learning how to compete late in games because the Bears are fielding an uncompetitive team?
Yeah.
That, I mean, you know, we talk about reps and the value of reps, and I was screaming about this a couple weeks ago. Not all reps are created equal.
Yeah, you were saying that.
And, you know, in the second half of this game, you know, the Bears lose, you know, 30-12. It's unrealistic to sit there and say that what you saw from Caleb Williams in the third quarter and fourth quarter is anything that can translate. I mean, to say it is just a leap of faith.
I'm seeing three things here that are all the case, but they're very different points. One, he's better, and I thought this in training camp, and I think it even more so now. He's a better quarterback than Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky, the last two guys they tried to do this with. Okay. They tried to draft high and make into a franchise quarterback. He's better than those guys. Also, my second point would be, weren't you supposed to be Caleb Williams?
Right.
I thought you were Caleb Williams, the guy that we heard about. Like he would tell you, I'm not even close to what I thought I would be this year. He talked going into the season, Pat, about exceeding C.J. Stroud's marvelous rookie season of 2023. And, I mean, he's not even leading his own class right now. He's not going to catch Jaden Daniels. The third point, though, I'm making, he's not going to catch him this year. The third point, though, I'm making is the Bears, as they did with Fields and Trubisky, but I think to a greater extent this year with Caleb Williams, the Bears have failed him.
Yep.
The Bears have absolutely failed him. And they have put him with coaches that should not be coaching. I can't even imagine what the next job will be for Matt Eberflus, or especially Shane Waldron. I mean, Shane Waldron, I don't think would get an offensive coordinator position at a good-sized college right now. Matt Eberflus, his next job might be two steps back like Matt Nagy had, going to a position coach or something like that. They surrounded him with coaches that did not know what they were doing by the Bears' own admission. They put him behind an offensive line that is a disaster. And finally, you have somebody saying it in Thomas Brown on Monday night. Thomas Brown looks at that lost fumble, the strip sack, which was in scoring territory for the Bears in the first quarter, and says, well, I don't expect Caleb to have eyes in the back of his head. Mm-hmm. Well, that guy came right at him from the blind side, got right past Kieran Amagaji, who should not have been starting tonight. I'm not excited about a future. I don't know that there is even a Bears future for Larry Borum. And there obviously will be some kind of run for Kieran Amagaji. He was a third-round pick. They don't just throw those away. Now is not the time. Now is not the time to play around with what's best for 2025 on the offensive line in front of your franchise hopeful quarterback. Larry Borum would have been the better case. If you really want to just go all out and let's just do 2025 preseason right now for these last few games, well, then do it all the way and put Darnell Wright at left tackle and put Kieran Amagaji at right tackle and play Tyler Scott and whoever else. Furthermore, you got a guy, Caleb Williams, with an ostensibly very talented group of skill players, but are you happy with DeAndre Swift this season?
No.
Do you think that the Bears have gotten their money's worth out of him? Do you think the Bears have gotten their money's worth out of Keenan Allen?
Nope.
I think they probably are about getting their money's worth, but are you happy all around with the employee that DJ Moore has been this year?
Nope.
No. A lot of issues around Caleb Williams and a lot of ways that they've failed him. And now, this is one of the things you got to understand about covering a team, and I would imagine a lot of you listening to this probably think like this. Everything relates back to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Everything. And part of what they theoretically had in place for Caleb Williams this year was a really good defense that would give him a lot of margin, and early in the season it did. And it turns out not enough, because he played so poorly at the beginning of the season, which was something he talked about Monday night, about kind of the ups and downs of his season, that he thought he was pretty bad early on, which he was. Now that defense is part of why he's down two scores at halftime every week.
Right.
And to your point, Pat, that puts him in these scenarios where you're like, what is he actually getting out of this?
George McCaskey, which I realize is a name that most people listening here probably don't want to hear right now. When I talked to him at the start of the season, you know, he always says these platitudes, you know, we got to win the division, you know. You know, you can't make the playoffs unless you win, you know, a lot, if not all, of your home games. All this sort of platitude stuff. And I asked him about Caleb, and he said, "I just hope people are patient." And he should know better. He should know that they're not. And I think when you zoom out, you know, Caleb Williams is very early on in his run as an NFL quarterback.
And he's early on in his rookie contract with the Bears.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you think of this guy, he's going to be their quarterback for minimum two more seasons after this.
Yeah. And I think that making big picture judgments about him in this situation is foolish. It's just straight up foolish.
We didn't think he'd be in this situation.
No.
We thought he was on a much better team than this.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, the Bears were one of the few teams to have a number one overall pick and try to field the real roster. And maybe that's one of the reasons that teams haven't tried to do that. I mean, some of it is luck, is they wind up with this pick. But the other part is it's just conflicting interests. And, maybe there's no such thing as a path where you have a veteran in DJ Moore who you give a lot of money to, and then you tell him, don't freak out when this quarterback who's never played quarterback in the NFL before overthrows you. Maybe that's just a bad idea out of the chute. And maybe the Bears are suffering from that. Big picture, this is just hopefully something that doesn't cause irreparable harm. I'm okay with reparable harm.
Well, you're sitting here now, though, looking at a roster, and we talked about this last week in California. You're looking at a pretty hefty shopping list, and not just little stuff. You need some like staple item. You need to go back to the meat department and find like some Chilean sea bass or, prime rib or something. Like you are shopping for expensive items this off season, when theoretically you would have been competitive, maybe in the playoffs this year as a wild card, and then looking to actually contend in 2025. Man, Pat, it feels like they're so far away from that. And if you want to shrink it down to just the immediate, looking at the NFC North, and you remember. Right now, today, as you listen to this, the entire NFC North is going to the playoffs except the Bears. The Bears are six games behind those three teams at the top. They're six games behind Green Bay, and then Detroit and Minnesota are even farther ahead of them.
And these aren't teams that are going to make the playoffs and get fed to the Wolves. These are three of the four biggest favorites to win the NFC.
And we've talked about this a lot. You've probably heard me say this a lot, that the NFL and rebuilding is a zero-sum game, that your rebuild not only requires you to get your own house in order, but to get it in order better than everybody else that's rebuilding. Not that the I can't tell whether the Vikings were rebuilding or not. They have just managed to kind of stay pretty steady. Their down year out of the three Kevin O'Connell years was managing to go 7-10 with no quarterbacks last year.
Actually, but they had four.
Ryan Poles took the job and talked about the intention to, quote, take the North and never give it back. And since then, I believe the Bears are 2-14.
Correct.
In the North. And they just feel incredibly far away from those teams. The Vikings might feel to you like a little bit of a fluke that they're so good, and that, this year and with Sam Darnold, maybe they are a first-round knockout in the playoffs. They're also, by the way, competing for still the number one seed. They're tied with Detroit and Philly for the best record in the NFC. But the Vikings have a quarterback that they drafted 10th overall who's going to debut next year, J.J. McCarthy. I mean, all of these teams, the Vikings, the Lions, and the Packers, are still this doesn't appear to me to be anything short-lived. No. By any of those teams. All of those teams are built in a sustainable way and already winning right now. How do you make up that ground? I mean, Pat, by the end of it, assuming that those teams still keep winning, the Bears could be eight games behind everybody in the NFC North. Because it's hard to picture the Bears winning any games. Maybe the rest of the way, maybe they catch a break and Seattle's playing a third-string quarterback or anything or something on that Thursday night game, and Seattle's coming from west to east on a short week. Even then, you're at the point that's the second-to-last game. And right now today, the Bears are sitting ninth in the NFL draft. And behind some – if you think the Bears are bad, I mean, they're behind a bunch of teams that they probably would beat. Mm-hmm. And some of them they have, like Carolina and Jacksonville. The Bears really need to, from an asset standpoint, are more – it's more beneficial to them to lose out. But if you're going to try to win, which they are trying to win, they are not sitting guys in order to lose. Thomas Brown is certainly not trying to tank his audition for this and several other jobs over these five games. You have to ask yourself, what would change so drastically that they have a shot, for example, this coming Sunday against the Lions, the following week against Seattle, who just the other day was leading their division, I think, fell out of it now. But is still going to be competing for a playoff spot. And then Green Bay, if they're playing all their guys and playing for seeding and playing to win, How could you even fathom the Bears winning that when you were talking about just these last three games, 53-0 deficit at halftime, and I mean these last two games just non-competitive.
Yep. The short answer is you hope that the wrong team wins the Thursday night game. The short answer is that if you played a drinking game in that Thursday night game, where it was Sam Howell or Caleb Williams, if you took a shot every time somebody got sacked, you'd probably end up dead.
If you took a shot every time someone got hurt in that game, you would not make it, because that's what keeps happening in these Thursday games.
And I'm not as interested in the next 3 weeks as I am, to your point, the macro issue of how in the world are you going to keep up with your three neighbors in your division. This is the least sexy podcast point you're going to hear all week, and I'm sorry, but you need an offensive line. The Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson may or may not be a genius, but he's got a great offensive line, so we'll never find out until he goes somewhere where he doesn't. The Packers have the ability to run the ball when everybody on the planet knows they're going to run the ball. That is really hard to do. The Vikings, you saw, they have a top 10 running back, and they have Justin Jefferson coming into the game, I think was the second leading receiver in football. Jordan Addison's in the top 25. You don't do that unless you can block. That's step one.
You're thinking that's part of why Sam Darnold is having a resurgence. It's the best offensive line he's played on.
Yes, and I think Jared Goff is part of – I think there are 10 guys in the league that are just like Jared Goff, and I think Jared Goff's in a great situation, and that situation is he might have the best offensive line in football.
Well, go ahead.
And when you talk about your shopping list, about how extensive it is, it's extensive because there might be four or five offensive linemen on it. They also need two or three or four defensive linemen because the Montez Sweat that the Bears signed last year to anchor their defense has 4.5 sacks, something like that. I think it's 4.5.
I think you're right.
And nobody else, Javon Dexter had a nice first 2 weeks or 3 weeks and fell off a cliff. And in terms of pass rushing, nobody else is very helpful.
Well, let me ask you the one question that people would want to ask about the offensive line then. The Bears are run by two offensive linemen, Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham, former offensive linemen themselves. Why is their offensive line the worst part of their roster?
Because they didn't want to spend when they could have spent. And in their draft, they had Rome Odunze, who they considered one of the best three players in the draft, sitting there at 9. Now, you and I have this conversation about, okay, if you say you need, that they should have wound up with a tackle, okay, who are you taking away?
Right.
Do you need to take away Rome Odunze?
You can't pick an offensive lineman and a defensive end and Rome Odunze with the number 9 pick.
No. And are you trading up?
Only one.
If you're trading up for Joe Alt, okay, so now Odunze's off this team and the Panthers' second round pick next year is off this team. Do you feel better about it then? I think that they leaned into depth, number one, instead of starting talent.
Top line talent.
I think Tevin Jenkins, who is very talented, yet doesn't finish football games about half the time. I don't think he can be a reliable piece going forward because, again, it's going to have to be a platoon because he gets hurt too much. I think Darnell Wright's been okay. And everything else has just been bad. I mean, Braxton Jones... Maybe we all owe Braxton Jones an apology because we saw what happened when you go from, I think Braxton's about a little below league average, but not a tire fire.
Braxton was flagged for replacement well before he missed this game.
Right, but I mean, he was never this. And Karan Amagaji, gave up the sack on a strip sack fumble, was called for two holding penalties, and then had an illegal man downfield penalty wiped out because it was third down and they threw an incomplete pass. He had about as noticeable of a bad game as an offensive lineman will ever have. And, again, bad situation for him. You feel bad for him. This is his first start, but you can't do that. Jason, we have not said Doug Kramer's name yet. I feel like we should.
The officials said it.
No, they didn't. Not that first time.
Said 68.
to reset, do you remember Doug Kramer? He was the offensive lineman that got handed the ball in Washington as a fullback and fumbled into the end zone. He came out again with the ball at the one-yard line on Monday night, blocked for DeAndre Swift, who ran for a one-yard touchdown, And then the flag came out because Doug Kramer did not tell the official when he checked into the game that he was an eligible receiver. You have to do that by law when you wear an offensive lineman's number, and he didn't. We had talked to him after the game. Kramer goes, slipped my mind.
Oh my gosh.
And then he said, you know, all I can say is it was my mistake that I made. Ugh. Obviously, we've had games where things like this have happened. It's disappointing. He said he apologized to his teammates. Doug Kramer's not the reason the Bears lost this game by any stretch. But he is so
knew you were going to say that word. Say it.
Emblematic.
Yes.
Doug Kramer, by the way, had they scored, they'd be down 13-7 with the Vikings getting the ball. As it is, it was 13-3, and the Vikings went 70 yards on their next two drives to go up big. But this is just – this shows that, you know, chasing Matt Eberflus out of town with a pitchfork didn't get rid of the dumb, for lack of a better word, losing things that the Bears have done over the year. And this joins the list of the fail Mary, mm-hmm. of the fail M Mary. Is that what we're going with, the Della Mercado one? The blocked field goal. Matt Eberflus having a brain fart on the sidelines. This is one of those places. Jason, we could cover sports for another 10 years and not see that happen again. And I like to bring up the Simpsons line where Homer says, why does everything that happens to dumb people always happen to me? Why does everything that happens to dumb teams always happen to the Bears?
It is still the roster that Matt Eberflus and his staff coached, and most of his staff is still coaching. It is still indicative of a poorly coached team. How many times did you see Matt Eberflus on the sidelines, not just this year, but last year especially too, and think, boy, is he on top of things?
Right.
Is he on top of the clock? Is he on top of the challenge flag? Is he on top of when to go for it on fourth down? Is he on top of when to go for two? Is he on top of the play clock right now? You have to think there are other things that happen behind the scenes, mm-hmm. that he also was not on top of, and that his staff also was not on top of.
You have to think that Doug Kramer, though, in this particular incident, Doug Kramer's got to be smart enough to report. And we asked Thomas Brown after, and he said, you know, when he runs in, he's got his back to me, so I can't really see what's going on. And yes, there are coaches who keep an eye out for these things, but no, nobody kept an eye out for it now. It's just, and then you have to ask yourself, Jason, this is a guy who's on the sideline for the first time in his career, literally, a guy who's in charge for the first time in his career, and a staff where you've got a couple people doing roles that they weren't doing a month ago. Like, I guess we should probably expect some foolishness on the sideline.
Things to slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
That play, I didn't catch in all the fury that we had over that, whether you mentioned that play happens on first and goal at the one.
Yep.
With the game on the line, the Bears end up kicking a 29-yard field goal. Reminded me a little bit of that, although it was a one-sided debacle in this case, but it reminded me a little bit of that goal line situation in Cleveland about a year ago where it just took 20 plays to get in from the one because of bad play and penalties by both teams.
Yeah, the way it went real quick was first and goal at the 6, 5-yard run by Swift. So they're second and goal at the 1 again. Amagaji gets a holding penalty, and then Caleb throws 2 incomplete passes.
Amagaji had 4 penalties, I believe, today. He allowed the strip sack, and he had 2 holds, 1 false start, and he had an ineligible man downfield that was declined. Not a great day for him. The offensive line being what it is, you know, there's something I would give them. Tevin Jenkins is a good idea that hasn't worked out, mm-hmm. and is not really in their control whether Tevin Jenkins stays healthy. Other than that, one of the things that really offends me and bothers me, mm-hmm. about is the word general managership. And this was a huge problem with Ryan Pace, mm-hmm. is this smartest guy in the room syndrome. Mm-hmm. Thinking that you know more than everybody else. And Ryan Poles has mostly not acted like that.
Nope.
He has talked a lot of times about the draft itself as just such a guessing game,
yep.
that you just want as many picks as you can get because maybe you find some guys. I think that Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham and their staff, they've outsmarted themselves on the offensive line. I think that with the exception of Darnell Wright, who's good, And Tevin Jenkins, who was a good idea and a pretty good, actually, reclamation project by the Bears on a bad draft, by the Poles staff on a bad pace draft pick. I think that they have fallen in love with Braxton Jones and that they missed, I don't think they are anymore, but I think they did to an extent that hurt them and made them think they were fine at a position that they weren't. I think they believed that they could fix Nate Davis and the rest of the league was telling you no, that we don't think you can fix Nate Davis. And they've also thought, hey, we can take all of these discards, all of these guys that other teams are done with, like Ryan Bates, or guys that other teams are not really interested in the draft, sixth round picks, Braxton Jones, Doug Kramer type guys, and we can make them into a Pro Bowl offensive line. We can do what everyone else can't figure out. Everyone else will have to spend high draft picks. Everyone else will have to spend free agent capital to build a great offensive line. We will build it with our minds because we can identify talent better than everybody else. It's almost never true, Pet.
Nope.
I think it might have been true for Bill Belichick. And even then, it was not so much that he could identify the best talent. It was that he could identify the right skill sets to fit what he needed them to do, which is great in itself. Great, like, cohesive strategy from personnel acquisition to personnel deployment, if you want to call it that. I don't think that you are usually going to be smarter than the other teams. I don't think there are 31 other teams sitting around saying, well, we don't know what to do with the offensive line, so we're just going to have to throw money at that problem because we can't scout or develop or anything like that. I think that the Bears have got a little too cute, a little too smartest guy in the room about their offensive line, and man, have they paid for it this year.
I think we could do an entire podcast on this idea. Also, you know,
they did that with Waldron too. I mean, they interviewed 9 guys, right, and he's the worst of the 9.
Yeah, he was
the guy they picked.
I would argue to you that front offices, whether it's in football, baseball, basketball, wherever, the whole point of building up an offensive line is, or building up a front office and spending money to add more people and add better technology and add more scouts, is that you can convince your bosses that you're doing it smarter than the other guy. And maybe that's just the margins, and maybe it's all a crapshoot. I don't know. All I know is that when we talk about the offensive line, for years I laughed at the Lions because they stuck with Jared Goff when they had an opportunity to draft a quarterback when they weren't very good.
And they drafted O-line and pass rusher.
And it worked out pretty well. And, you don't know whether their defense can ever stop anybody ever again. But what's the opposite of the immovable force in the do you remember this?
Yeah.
Whatever that is going to be the Bears' offense in the first half against the Lions' defense. They couldn't stop a sneeze right now.
My shopping list for this offseason has got to be O-line first, and they've got lots of problems. Mm-hmm. They've got lots of things. I mean, pass rusher is usually my most important position to address other than quarterback, but addressing the offensive line helps your quarterback here. I cannot watch more of this. If I'm sitting at home watching Bears games on TV, if I'm sitting up in these press boxes watching this, or Pet, if I'm Ryan Poles' boss, I cannot watch more of this.
Nope. Jason, that'll do it. I said you were more disgusted than usual. You lived up to it. I appreciate
is this,
that.
Is this like abnormal? I feel like I'm at this level after every one of these games.
No, I think you were a little more worked up today.
Like I'm less angry. Because, like, the Eberflus part of it is over. I'm not offended by the mismanagement in that regard anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Although
I'll tell my therapist about it. Go ahead.
We will be back for another Jason Therapy session later in the week. Until then, you can follow he and I and Mark Potash on the Sun-Times website, on the app, or if you live in town, check out the actual newspaper. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.